Welcome. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're pleased to have Stephanie Marone in her book, Audacious Aging, which is a compilation of many of the, I guess, wise people of our time and their beliefs, their suggestions, and their ideas on how we can age. Hello, Stephanie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you, Susan?
I'm doing well.
Nice to talk with you again.
Yeah. I know that you had invited me to be part of this at one time, but I just simply wasn't ready for it. But now that I have seen the book, I think it's a great book with many, many wonderful ideas about aging. My video production company did a series of videos on aging after the Conscious Aging seminar here in Atlanta, which was in 96. And I got to meet a lot of the people that you asked. Ram Dass was one of them, and you know, many of the other people that you have in here, experts on aging in our society, were at that conference, were speakers at that conference. So,
well, thank you for your kind words about my book, and I think that that term itself, conscious aging, is a wonderful indication of where we are moving with the view of aging in our society. There's a lot of people working to transform it, and conscious aging is one of the catchphrases, if you will, that to help define that movement.
And really, you know, with the baby boomers, as the baby boomers move through, they just continued to revolutionize every phase of their life. You know, when they move through their childbirth years, they help to develop more natural childbirth. When they move through their menopausal age, we developed natural hormone replacement. And now that we're moving on into the latter years, we're revolutionizing aging. I mean, I think that's what's happening.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I think just by our sheer numbers that happens, and the fact of the way that we baby boomers have lived our lives, I say it as that we're not going to go gently into the night.
That's not
the way it's going to look.
We're not doing the same thing as our parents. One of the authors here said that our parents, you know, just worked for the same company for 40 years, got the retirement, you know, went off on to the retirement, but then the retirement was a little bit too less activity, and that led to its own problems.
And it killed quite a few people, just from the statistics that are available from that time period of what happens when particularly men go into a retirement after a lifetime of productivity. And I think it probably relates partly to a sense of no more purpose. And when people lose their sense of purpose, they can have major health issues follow.
I think that that's really true. There's an opportunity when you turn about 50, I think, to slow down a little bit. I think it's a natural thing. I mean, when you have the Chiron return, you often face health challenges that kind of force you to slow down a little bit. You pay more attention to your diet. You have to pay more attention to your hormonal status if you're a female, because it shifts and often causes discomfort. So you start paying attention to things that cause discomfort. And I think that in your 50s, that's when you start understanding that you have, you know, you are in the last quarter of your life, most likely. The half of your life for other people, depending on, you know, how long you're going to live. But you do start realizing that you're mortal, and that's something that at 21, you don't have those ideas. It's not, very few 21-year-olds really contemplate their death in anything other than maybe a romanticized way, you know, not in a realistic way.
Well, that said, there's also another belief that goes along with that I think it would behoove us to get rid of, which is that we're all just going to degenerate into a more and more feeble condition as we get older, and then we're going to fade into death. That one of the things that I found so exciting about doing this book is the scientists who are included in the book, like Gene Cohen, for example, and Bruce Lipton, both of whom say that this is a much more complex picture than the societal beliefs about aging would have it to be, which is that Bruce Lipton in particular talks, he's a cell biologist, he talks about how we actually program ourselves to age by our beliefs. And there are other people in the book that talk about this as well. And one of the experiments that so many people have talked about since, or one of the series of experiments since the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, in which the work of Masaru Emoto was covered, that's the Japanese researcher who experimented with the molecules of water. So just a simple jar or bottle of water labeled with a positive word, the formation of the molecules in crystalline forms was quite different than what occurred in a bottle of water labeled with a negative word. So this is the power of the thoughts that you feed your mind. What are we doing to ourselves? Because, of course, we're made up of molecules. So what are we doing to ourselves by the negative beliefs that we're programming in about our aging? And I have many people in my life that I'm amazed at how many, I don't want to say ageist things they say, but you could put it in that category. And I'm talking about, they're talking to themselves about, they'll say things like, it's just so hard for me to get up out of a chair. And and they'll make comments about this kind of thing all the time. And to me, it's programming enfeebling. There is a reality based on lifestyle practices that if you have had a bad diet, meaning a processed diet, for most of the years of your adult life, that is going to catch up with you. And in the book, various luminaries talk about that as well. Deepak Chopra, Andrew Weil, particularly, talking about if what you've done environmentally does not support the health of your cells, then of course those things are going to catch up with you. He talks about the anti-inflammatory diet, because inflammation in the body, and this doesn't have to be raging infection, he's just talking about processed food diet produces inflammation in the body, and that's what makes you old and stiff, one of the things. So it increases the likelihood of arthritis and all of those, so you know, seen as inevitable chronic degenerative diseases. So I'm very excited by this view of we really need to clean up our minds and stop programming feebleness into our lifespan.
Well, and Andrew Weil, who has a wonderful thing at the end of the book, didn't mention one thing I want to add that I'm sure he's aware of, and that's that many processed foods now have genetically modified foods in them. Corn, canola, soy. I have recent evidence that soy, genetically modified soy, may depress the immune system. Genetically modified corn may cause food allergies, you know, so whenever you eat it, you blow it up. So, there's another danger in there that since we don't know the health effects of genetically modified foods, that we need to just stay away from processed foods and also pay attention to what brands, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and other organizations that have vowed to try to keep genetically modified foods off their shelves use. If you don't have one of those stores in your neighborhood, you can still look at the brands they carry and or even check the websites of the. I was pleased that Costco had milk the other day. I usually don't buy milk, but somebody asked me to bring milk over to make ice cream, and it was growth hormone free milk. Printed right on that Costco bottle, and that was great. You know,
that's
that was
wonderful,
like, my goodness, isn't that wonderful? Costco is now, but it's a consumer that's going to keep these things away out of our diet. And the dangers of genetically modified foods have not been looked at by our regulatory agencies in a way that's responsible. So we need. I mean, there's. It's one thing to do processed foods, and we know the dangers of that. Dr. Weil does a nice job in here talking about the inflammatory, making your body more inflammatory, making it more acidic. Some of your other authors also go into that. But there's this big question mark about genetically modified, and genetically modified foods in animals, if they're forced to eat them, because animals will go and not eat genetically modified foods. You know, they'll go to the other bin and eat the non-genetically modified food and leave the genetically modified alone.
That's that inner wisdom that we all have.
Exactly.
We can only tap into it.
We need to get back to that. But in any case, you know, the animals who are fed genetically modified foods have tumor formation, they have allergies, they have all these conditions. That's really scary. I mean,
and what's your view on organic soy, Susan?
I think organic soy is probably fine unless you have a thyroid deficiency. Many of us who are mold sensitive end up with thyroid deficiencies because of a hypothalamic defect caused by damage to the leptin receptors in the hypothalamus by the biotoxin that the mold makes. That sounds complicated, but basically what happens is in a moldy environment, many of us are in moldy environments, either at work or home or at the school.
And how would we know that? Where would the mold be?
Well, the mold could be anywhere in the building, but the air conditioning system, the vent system, can have mold in it. And,
if they don't change the filters very often.
Well, filters or even just clean the air ducts. Or a lot of times when if you have this, it's a genetic thing. One-fourth of the population has it, three-fourths don't. But even when it's really, really wet outside and there's a lot of just mold, you know, I noticed the other day there's mushrooms growing around my center. That means there's a lot of water. And I've had a lot more achiness and, you know, a lot more symptoms. But for someone like me who has this, we can't eat a lot of soy because if we do, it further depresses the thyroid. And then we develop the hypothyroid symptoms of fatigue, constipation, dry skin. So other than that caveat, I think organic soy is fine. I mean, it's just, I don't really think that genetically modified soy is advisable. I don't know that
I'm in agreement with you on that.
Yeah. But, you know, people can learn to muscle test. I mean, I think most people, if you've got your intuition intact, if you think about the food and then just kind of go neutral, or you can even do it with the rods, you know, that you can make some divining rods out of coat hangers, and you can get information with a pendulum or a muscle testing. There's ways you can get information if you're not sure whether or not you should eat something.
And that would be the tapping into the inner wisdom. That's kind of a check on your inner wisdom to see what your body has to say about these things.
I have doctors at my center now who say that even at Whole Foods, they do a quick muscle test to see if they should eat something. I mean, our food supply is not exactly, you know, stellar. I mean, all the way from, you know, the growing it to the grocery shelves, there's a lot of opportunity for it to get things that we don't want in it and things we're allergic to and we don't know we're allergic to.
And the same testing could be applied to supplements or anything else.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Supplements aren't regulated at all by what's in them. I mean, you can go with certain companies that have their own internal regulations. That's what we do at our center. We use companies that are more nutraceuticals because they're so scientifically controlled at the level of the company. But what you see on the shelf at the, you know, at the drugstore or the health food store or even at the, you know, the dollar store, you don't know what's in there because it's simply not regulated.
Yes. That said, you know, it's I view it as very important how we treat our temple, our body. But one of the reasons why I wrote this book is because so many of the books on aging talk simply about the physical.
What you
can do to live longer, you know, what you eat to live longer, what you avoid to live longer. And I really wanted to look at the other aspects, the body, mind, spirit aspects of growing older, and that I think in some ways there are as important or more important the mind and spirit aspects of later life, because there are people who have taken very good care of their temple but not addressed the mind and spirit issues, and that can end up coming back and zapping their body.
It's true. I really believe what Deepak Chopra says in his essay. I believe more than anything, your inner knowing and your expectation of how long you're going to live shape your reality.
Yeah, and I just
more than anything.
And I just want to mention that I love the title of his piece, The Land Where No One Is Old.
Right.
Yeah.
He takes us through a brief exercise to project something different than what we're projecting. And it's a great exercise because that is, you need to exercise different projections and see how they feel. I will tell you this, though. Deepak Chopra, in his Book of Secrets, described going to a Rishi master. Did you happen to read that or listen to it? It was on CD.
No, I don't know that. Tell me about it.
Oh, you need to do that. His Book of Secrets is fabulous. But in the Book of Secrets, he went to a Rishi master, and 5,000 years ago, these masters sat in meditation and wrote on scrolls all of the people that would be coming to them. And on the scroll was his parents' name, the date of his birth, his brothers and sisters, his kind of his life mission, who he married, the names of his children. At the bottom of it was the date of his death. Now remember, this is written 5,000 years ago. So only the people that are going to come get the scrolls had the scrolls done for them. So, you know, otherwise there'd be too many scrolls. And he said that he read it all over and he thought it was accurate other than his mother's name was wrong. But then when he asked his mother, that was her true name. She had actually given everybody, she didn't like that name, and so she never told anybody that was her name. And then at the bottom, and then they asked me, did I want to know the date of my death? And he said yes, and then he said, he didn't say what it was, but he said it was comfortably far off. So, this brings up a theory that actually I discussed with Dr. Irvin Laszlo, who's the author of Science in the Akashic Field, because his theory actually explains this phenomenon, and he went on during the interview to explain it. But it may be that actually our death date is written, so to speak. However, you could probably go out before your death date, and I personally believe that people do that through indiscretion, through mistakes, through, you know, whatever. You can die earlier than your death date, but your death date is really what you need to do. So if you run into an individual who's simply not worried about getting old, it may be that they're not going to get old. Their death date may be in their 50s.
They may have come to terms with it in another way.
Exactly. And then, like for me, I kind of know when my death date is, and I kind of know why it's there, and I also haven't really, I mean, I know what I need to work on, because when I think about it, these things are brought to me that I need to do this, 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 and this. And if I don't do these things, my older age will not be as comfortable.
And
okay.
Are these things purpose of
dietary,
life?
Lifestyle, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Not purpose of life.
Oh my goodness, no. You know a little bit about my life. I've got more purpose than I can possibly.
Right. They're not missions you have still to fulfill.
I once in meditation asked if I should start a 401k plan because my accountant wanted me to, and the answer spirit gave was, you're not going to retire. You're not going to retire. Put your money in your house. So I put my money in my house, paid my house off, and then when it came time to borrow more money because I wanted to start another project, I borrowed against my house again.
I guess a lot of baby boomers are in this position that none of us are going to retire.
Well, a lot of us will maybe slow down. You know, I think that it is a time to reflect and maybe get a little more sleep. Sleep deprivation is something that we need to talk about. Sleep deprivation is something I have a lot of experience with. Being on call at 6 hospitals for most of my career and having phone calls throughout the night from nurses that are attending very ill patients in ICUs and everything. Sleep deprivation really does make one more acidic and inflammatory. I can tell you that.
And also you don't get your dream time, which is very important.
No,
yeah.
No, being woken up at different times. And I truly feel sorry for my patients. True compassion for those who have insomnia. And, you know, the Michael Jackson story that was just on the news, his insomnia, that must have just been pure hell. Because we all escape into, I think our bodies repair in the dream state, too. There's a lot of evidence that when people with fibromyalgia who never get into REM sleep don't repair, and that's why they have so much pain. And Dr. Teitelbaum said that if you can't get these people to sleep, you can't get them to heal. And I believe that so much of our repair, which is vital to living long, isn't it? I mean, don't we have to repair our bodies? I mean, we go through wear and tear during the day. And if you can't sleep, you can't repair. And eventually, if you can't sleep, I think it affects your mental processing. Many, many of my accident victims fell asleep on the highway because of sleep apnea, you know, insomnia. And then here they are falling asleep on the highway going 50 miles an hour. That's not conducive to survival in some cases.
Well, there are basic physical things that people need to have in order, as I call it, to keep the temple healthy.
Right.
The other thing about the slowing down, that was something that I had to redefine in my mind, because I'm a high energy person, and the idea of slowing down was not pleasant for me to think about. But I realized that it's Zalman Schachter talks about it in his chapter in this book as well, is that he was having the same issue of facing that he couldn't do what he used to do, and he felt like he needed to keep this secret. It was like a shameful secret.
Mm-hmm.
And then he started looking at it, because of course he's a pioneer in the aging field and in redefining aging. And I want to say at this moment that while we look at many people in our parents' generation, and I'm speaking as a baby boomer now, that many of the people then had a certain kind of life, which, you know, was the classic line of work for the same company all your life and then retire. Mm-hmm. But there were many, many people in that generation and older who did not want to go gently into the night, and that were trying to redefine aging. And Zalman Schachter is a hero in this regard.
Right.
But he began looking at the seasons of life, and looking at the he used the year and broke down the months, sections of the month, sections of the year were portions of your life. And so he started looking at October, November, December, which was where he was. And looking at what is the task of that time period, and what are we here for in that time period, and it's there is a physical reality of slowing down for many people, and perhaps part of why that is that you can attend to other business,
and
that other business can be, you know, it's a very deep and rich kind of business, and part of that business is being an elder for others.
Yes,
and sharing what you know, sharing the wisdom. And one of the things he also talks about is that the redefinition of what it is to be an elder. He talks about saging instead of aging, and that why do we have so many elders right now in this what they call the tsunami of the baby boomers moving into the elder age? That why is this? And his view that he came up with this view that he holds to, and I agree with him, that there are so many elders on Earth for a reason, and it's because Gaia, Earth, is in trouble and needs the wisdom of the elders to move us out of this endangered planet time.
Oh, I agree.
I think that's a beautiful
beautiful
way to look at it.
Yeah, and I think it's important that we change our preconceived notions as well. You know, many people fear death. In fact, I was interviewing Deepak Chopra on my TV show, and I asked Deepak, now that he wrote the book, How to Know God, what was he going to do next?
That's a great question. What was the answer?
He said the biggest fear that the majority of humans have is death. And he was going to write a book on overcoming that fear. So I think that we need to learn more about the process of death. Cindy Dale wrote a book called Illuminating the Afterlife, where she took all of the great traditions, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, and everything, and then took it a few steps forward. We need to look at really what life and death is so that we can drop the fear around it, and so that we can understand that it's just simply moving into the next phase of our existence, which should be very natural and certainly is not uncomfortable. You know, lying in an ICU bed for 3 months, you know, hooked up to tubes and being unable to move and being fed and everything, that can be uncomfortable, believe me. But actually dying is probably not, I mean, probably dying is something that if you truly knew what it was, you'd look forward to it, especially if you were not able to repair your body, if you had been lying in that ICU bed a little bit too long and couldn't get over it. So
that's a rather radical view, Susan, that aside from the ICU patient, about a radical view that we should actually look forward to our death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Why? Because we have a job to do on the other side. We have important work to do. I mean, you know, what's the song say? Every season, turn. Yeah, right. To every purpose, there is a season. Okay.
Yes.
So, when you are at the end of your life, remember Deepak Chopra's, scroll, the papaya scroll that with the death date? It is as natural to die at that date as it is to be born at the date at the top of the scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And if you realize this, then you quit holding on to everything. And if you realize this in the middle of your life, then you quit holding on to everything that you think you want to hold on to. You know, you understand that the material things in your life are not going to be able to be taken with you, your money's not going to go with you, your power's not going to go with you. So you need to use death as your advisor, and that's not my words, that's the words of Don Juan, you know, in the mm-hmm. Carlos Castaneda's material. But it's very true. We all die. I don't know that there's any of us who have escaped that recently, anyway. So knowing that you're going to die, you should understand that that's a very, very natural transition, just like being born was, and that release the fear and the uncertainty by educating yourself. That's what I did. I started interviewing all these authors who were experts on it, and
there was even that book, How We Die, which gave all the physical details of what happens.
Yeah, you know, Cindy Dale's book talks that, like, for a natural death, say your death date, not one where you go out sooner because you made a mistake or didn't take care of yourself. They're natural. 7 years before your death date, you start a process, which he describes in detail. And, my mother's 87 now. And my mother had an opportunity or a window of opportunity to die because it was just there after my father died at age 85. She was 2 years younger than me at the time. But she chose not to do that, and I was very pleased that she didn't. But we actually had a conversation about it. She was saying she was really depressed and lonely. They'd been married for over 60 years, and it's natural to be depressed and lonely when your spouse of 60 years dies. But I said, Mom, you have a choice. You know, you can go ahead and go out because, you know, immunity is definitely tied to your depressed or happy state. I mean, many of the authors in the book Audacious Aging talk about that, and I think that is so true.
Well, Jean Shinoda Bolen calls it being a choice maker, and she wasn't particularly talking about death, but she was talking about the choices that you make in your life, and are you going to be a choice maker, or are you just going to lie down for your aging?
Well, my mother is a wonderful, wonderful mother. Okay, she was a child psychologist, and that's why I tell everybody I'm perfect, you know. But anyway, she has great will, and that she instilled that in me, will, which is important. It has to be the right direction of will, but will makes it so that had she willed herself to die, she could have died early. You see what I mean?
Well, I think that's again,
if she wanted to die, she would have gone out, and part of her wanted to.
And that's again the inner wisdom that you talked about with the animals choosing the food, is that they also can choose to die whenever they want.
Exactly. So,
obviously, we're animals too, so we have that capability.
So she had a choice to make. She could have, you know, given up, become hopeless, helpless, you know, whatever, and her immunity go down, and she could have gone out. Or she could have attracted an accident to herself. I mean, I believe, as a trauma surgeon for 26 years, I believe that people actually do attract accidents to themselves. Many of my more intuitive patients say that they, you know, they've been wanting a way to get out of that job that they hated, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, guess what? So basically, but she decided not to. You know, she decided instead to, and I loved some of the stuff in your book because it reminded me of my mother. She lives in her house. She drives her car. She, you know, has multiple games that she plays, bridge. I can't even remember the name of all of them. But games that engage the mind. Her biggest problem is actually that her friends keep dying because,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so I said, Mom, get some younger friends. And I loved it when one of your authors said the same thing, you know. I think it was the writer. The writer said that he had younger friends.
Yeah, and part of it, too, is that do something new.
Right.
So, and that, you know, new friends would be
yeah.
in that category, but that's very important mm-hmm. for audacious aging is to be doing new things.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the worst problems of old age is the fear of death. And if we can release that fear, just like Deepak Chopra shared with me on the interview, if we can release that fear, we can truly have, you know, a much better, you know, November and December of our lives. And also, release the fear of more disability.
Yes, I think it's about acceptance, and I think
right,
that holds true all the way through life is that where the struggle and angst and mental and emotional
mm-hmm.
and problems come from is not accepting what is. And it doesn't mean that you have to, again, lie down for whatever is, but
you can change it.
Yeah, it's accepting
something different.
Accepting the natural laws of life.
Yeah.
And that if you're struggling against the natural laws of life your whole life, it's going to be difficult, and that doesn't end when you move into the October, November, December.
So I think Lynn Taggart's section on intention is very important.
McTaggart, excuse me.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Yeah,
Lynn McTaggart, sorry. She points out to us that every thought we have creates.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first step, I think, is to become aware of what you're thinking, because many people are unaware of what they're projecting. And you can kind of do that throughout the day by having kind of that observer role,
yeah,
where you start observing your thoughts, observing mm-hmm. your changes in mood, observing what ticks you off, observing what frustrates you, and then trying to shift that.
Yeah, and I think it's a revelation for many of us when we start tuning in and actually hear what our mind is thinking.
Yeah.
There's all these unconscious thoughts throughout the day, and many of them are negative, the vast majority.
I'd like to point out to people, too, that every time they get frustrated, if they are powerful creators, which many people around me are, they actually create it right into the physical, and it creates as inflammation within the body.
The frustration goes right into
frustration
physical.
Goes into the joints, into the mm. bursa, into the shoulders, you know. It's very interesting to me to follow, because I'm a student of spiritual medicine, obviously, very interesting for me to follow the conflict or the emotional shift on down through mental, emotional, and then finally landing in the physical. Because we're interested in spiritual medicine and releasing that in energy. And I don't know the name of the person, but you have someone in here who actually was releasing energy and shifting people quite dramatically through that release.
Releasing energy. That's not ringing a bell for me.
Okay, it was, let's see.
How was the method of releasing?
It was this... She did it at the chakra level.
That's Asha Clinton.
Right.
Yes,
right.
I've been through that that therapy. It's remarkable.
Advanced integrative therapy.
Yes, it's incredible. I can vouch for it.
Yeah, she is someone who's really discovered something important, I think.
Yes, and she was a psychotherapist for 25 years and frustrated that there were certain clients that no matter you know, what they did in talk mm-hmm. therapy, it didn't shift what was going on for them, the patterns that produced certain things in their lives. And so she developed this therapy out of that wanting to be more effective in helping people.
And the therapy is interesting because it is it relies on the theory, which I think is true, that trauma can isolate in certain parts of our body, say within the pelvis for sexual abuse, you know, within the heart for grief and heartache or disappointment. And as a healer, what in the healing room, I actually, when I put my hand over the chakra, I get the sense, sometimes like, you know, I'll say, well, what happened at age 8 with your older brother? You know, I mean, very, very definitive pinpoint in time of a trauma
that would
that
speak
is
to the,
still
that,
affecting them.
That would speak to that all that information is stored in the energy field of the person.
Yeah, and all I'm doing is reading the energy field. And that energy, and this is the most important point, as long as that trauma is still there, it attracts similar traumas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how that works. That's very
interesting, another
isn't
it? I think that's another natural law of life. Like attracts like.
Yeah. So, you know, the sixth time you marry an alcoholic husband, you marry the same man six times, you know, and just different names.
and you can blame your energy field.
Yeah, you can. Because until you release that energy of being a victim or victimized, you're going to attract certain other frequencies. I was working with a gentleman who knew a lot about sound therapy, and we were talking, and I said, you know, I have a feeling that when two people fall in love, all that happens is when you put their two energy fields together, they make one real person. And he laughed, and he said, actually, that's true. So it may all come down to frequency, and that the people you love hanging around with have the frequencies that you're missing.
Yeah, and then you can consider the people that are so jarring to you that their frequencies just don't match well with yours.
Exactly. And then that's good because then you don't dislike them as personalities. You just say, I don't care for their frequency. That's much more spiritually evolved.
I'm going to change the channel.
I'm going to change the channel, yeah. And I think it's also important to, if there is something in your life that you see the repeating pattern of, you can do releasing work. My spiritual mother and father were very good at this, and helped people in many. I think they went to 72 countries, especially South Africa and Germany. Those were the two where the most work needed to be done. But releasing work allows you to release energy through your voice. You say, I release my tendency to attract alcoholic husbands. You know, I fully love and accept myself, and I'm going to release this now.
And that, emotional freedom techniques would be, EFT would be one of those methodologies.
There's a lot of really good techniques. I interviewed Dr. Benor recently on the WEE technique, you know, forehead tapping. He's wonderful.
That would be the WHEE.
Right.
Yeah.
The WEE technique and the emotional freedom techniques, all of those tapping techniques, they use energy at the acupoint combined with verbal releasing to do it yourself, kind of. And then if you feel you can't do it yourself, find a healer that can extract energy from the chakra and, you know, work with a healer to release it, too. I mean, that's what a lot of healers do. That's why the healing works so, like, sometimes the healing is like miraculous, but actually it's just that the energy is easily released. You know?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? That it is that all those techniques that you named, we ought to give credit to Roger Callahan, who developed thought field therapy, because those are all offshoots of that.
They are.
But what's amazing to me about those, and this is why many people in the psychiatric and psychotherapeutic profession are skeptical about these techniques, is that you don't have to know the cause.
No, you don't.
You don't have to know the trauma. You just have to clear it. And that's, it kind of goes against, you know, what are we in now? Mm-hmm. 75 years of the psychology model that we've been operating under.
It's just too slow.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Who was it? One of your female authors said that she had OCD and then shifted it herself after she prayed.
I don't think it was Jean. No, that wasn't Jean Houston.
No.
That's not ringing a bell. OCD.
Yeah, she said she was 10, and her parents were crying themselves to sleep because she was so miserable with her OCD, and she prayed to God to help her, or prayed, no, actually, I don't think she prayed to God. She just prayed for something to change.
Was that maybe Nancy Swayze, like a little child? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. I think it was one of the people I've interviewed. But anyway, it was one of the female authors, and I
Power
just love...
Prayer? Is that what you're, why you're bringing that up?
I'm bringing it up because I want to show people that one of the most important things, if you've identified the problem, if you've identified what's making you miserable, ask for help.
Yes.
You know, just ask for help. And you don't have to specify how that help comes. You don't have to say, you know, God gives me a spontaneous remission. God give me a healer that can take the energy off of me. God give me an idea that can help me release the energy. But I think there's a lot to be said. We forget that we need to ask for help.
Yes.
We really do. I mean, we're all self-sufficient, you know.
And wherever it is that you look for help on whatever level, because not everyone is going to ascribe to the model of prayer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But she went to bed, I can't remember exactly, but in this, it's at the beginning of her story, and she said that it just simply released. She released that mental illness that was pretty severe, and then she was fine. And I thought, well, isn't that great? You know, isn't that wonderful that she had to learn at the age of 10 that she had to ask?
And what a powerful message to get so young.
Yeah. Well, she turned out to be a really... I have interviewed her on several of her books, so we can figure out which one she is. But
I'm looking, but it's just not ringing a bell for me. The story didn't stick.
But certainly, if you have an issue in your life that's kind of needs to be addressed, and that issue appears to be an energetic one or one from which you don't really see the origins, you know, maybe you brought it in from a past life. Maybe it's just hidden from you. You know, an affliction like OCD, most people wouldn't know where it came from, especially at the age of 10. You know, I mean, that's not something that we know the science behind.
It was Joan Borisenko.
Yes, it was Joan Borisenko. Because
yeah.
I've interviewed her several times. She's a delightful person.
Yes, and she tapped into her power as a human being pretty early.
Yeah. Yeah, it was similar to what happened to me in a dorm room. I had I woke up after studying and saw this golden light in the room. I turned around and there was a 7-foot angel, and I froze in fear. It was like that. That was an incident that changed my life.
And how old were you?
I guess I was 17, 17 or 18, and I could no longer be agnostic after that. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I was thinking about
that. Things do occur quickly.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you said about the view about what's awaiting us after death.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's great for those of us who I ascribe to that view as well. That it's just a transition into another stage, and that we continue our work, our soul work. But for people who don't believe that there's anything there. They're faced with, a larger task of having to let go of an attachment to life, believing that there's nothing later. That's a large thing to let go of.
Well, yeah, but there is something they can do. There is something called induced afterlife communication, and it's a technique that came by taking EMDR, you know, rapid eye movement thing for post-traumatic stress disorder, one step further.
Yeah.
And the psychologist that wrote the book on this, I've interviewed him, plus we do this in our clinic. Dr. Mike Greenberg did this, and he did it for me because I wanted to make sure it worked. And I've sent lots of people to him for this little exercise. When it doesn't matter if you're agnostic or atheist, this method still works. That's the beauty of it. It's a technology. And so you pick someone who's passed over, and you do this method, and then they appear in your mind's eye, and they talk to you. And you know it's real because they tell you stuff that you wouldn't know otherwise. I mean, they tell you information that you wouldn't know otherwise. And so that sort of proves to you that afterlife existence does happen. Plus, there's an awful lot of information right now on the electronic voices that they're gathering. You know, they're using, they're modifying things from Radio Shack and being able to do the electronic voice recordings of people who have passed over. So there's a large amount of communication right now between the dimensions, and probably
there is a lot of information that in my view supports that there is, but I'm not looking for evidence on that because there are, you know, those of us who have had certain experiences just know.
Right.
And so I'm not looking to persuade anyone that that's the case. I respect their right and where they are to believe whatever they want about what comes next. I just would like to help provide something that would enable them to feel good about their aging without relying on knowing that there's something on after they die.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of people would really feel better about people close to them who've passed over if they could do some of these technologies. I mean, it's really a method to deal with grief more than anything. Because grief can really make your life miserable. I mean, it's one of the really, really heavy duty energies. We see it a lot with pancreatic cancer.
An incidence of grief before it
develops. The energy of grief, which becomes held in the immune system around the heart, which is the thymus, and then in the solar plexus because of the grief combined with this being mad at God for taking someone from you.
This would be a chronic grief you're talking about.
A grief that isn't released in normal course. I mean, it's normal to grieve for a certain period of time, but then if it extends beyond that and is combined with the black energy of being really mad at God, that is the energy I keep seeing in pancreatic cancer. And, boy, they don't want to let go of it either. It is a very, very dense energy in many people. And they want that. They want it. They want to keep it.
And do you have techniques that could help? What methodologies would you suggest to release that black energy?
Well, I think any of the ones we've talked about, the healing techniques, the tapping techniques, anything. But again, one of the most important things is that one understand how reality is constructed. You know, that we project into the dream state, we project into the state where we're awake, and then there's an in-between state, which is probably eternity, which is probably closer to where we go between lives. It's neither of those. You see, I think people have to understand the structure of what they're in so that they don't have fear of what's beyond the structure.
And this is what I mean about the natural laws of life, but I think there is some disagreement about the natural laws. You know, there are those of us who ascribe to more of the Akashic natural laws.
Right.
Yeah,
well, if anybody wants to read the Science in the Akashic Field by Dr. Laszlo, I think it's one of the best theoretical books out there on theory of, is it called The Integral Theory of Everything. And I started out by asking him to explain with his theory the Deepak Chopra story I shared earlier, and he did. So that was great. You know? I thought that was wonderful. Well, we're coming to the close of our hour here. Is there any information, web information you'd like to share?
Yes, thank you. I'd like to give my website. It's,
okay.
It's www.stephaniemarone.com, and that's spelled StephaniemarOhn. There's other books that I've written on them, and I'd also like to say that I'm working now on the next anthology in the series. It's called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change, and Susan Kolb is in that book,
right,
which is very wonderful. That will probably be coming out toward the end of the year, and I'm very excited about the contributors there. This is really talking about the cultural shift that we're in the midst of now, which is women have taken leadership roles in virtually every field, And what does this mean for us individually as women? What does this mean for the culture? And looking at how it is that women have stepped into these leadership roles.
And I wanted to just put a plug in for your mental health series. We've interviewed Stephanie on many of her books. She's an excellent medical researcher. And I just last week recommended your series for bipolar disorder to somebody. And I recommend your books for my patients and especially their parents when they're children and they're dealing with these issues, because
Thank you very much. I'd also like to say for Audacious Aging, it's available everywhere, but there is a website. It's www.audaciousaging.com.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. We've been talking with Stephanie Marone, the editor of the book Audacious Aging, which has many, there's probably 30 authors here?
I think it's 32.
32?
I'm not quite sure. I haven't counted it in a while, and I'm on to the next book.
That's right. But all of the wisdom of all of these very, very astute spiritual and political and, just the leaders of our time are in here, and it's a great book for anybody to read who's going to age, which is most of us.
And really, thanks. I think about 40 contributors.
Right. I'm looking at the front of the book and saying there's quite a few. Well, thank you very much.
And thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on the
show
with you.
All righty. Well, we'll do the goddess book next, probably.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay. Thanks
Take
a lot,
care.
Stephanie.
Bye.
Well, next week we have Dr. Diane Powell. And she has written a book called The ESP Enigma, The Scientific Case for Psychic Phenomena. I believe Dr. Powell is from Harvard. And then Michael Cohen is an attorney on the 15th of August, and he's written a book, Future Medicine, Ethical Dilemmas, Regulatory Challenges, and Therapeutic Pathways to Healthcare and Healing and Human Transformation. And then on the 22nd, we have Dr. Christian DeQuincy back, his book, Deep Spirit, Cracking the Noetic Code. And on the 29th, Laura Kim is back with us. She's one of the premier medical intuitives with her book, Intuitive Wellness, Using Your Body's Inner Wisdom to Heal. I want to remind people we have Noetic Science Meeting, Kimberly Rayfield, our licensed acupuncturist, traditional Chinese medicine doctor, is giving the lecture in August. This will be the third Thursday of August at the center. Please call for information. It's August 20th. Please call for information, 770-457-4677, or to be put on our email list for our newsletter. This newsletter, we have a tribute to Michael Jackson, my personal experience having emailed with Michael Jackson for 2 months. I've written a tribute to him with some of these emails and some insight into his life in the current news.
Don't you just hate trying on bathing suits? Wait a minute, you look great. Plastic surgery?
Not surgery. I got an endermology treatment from the experts at Plastikos.
What's endermology?
Endermology is the terrific non-surgical treatment that Europeans have been using for years to tone skin and contour the body. Endermology by Plastikos feels great, and you can see the difference it makes.
No kidding. Who do I call?
Plastikos, a leader in plastic and reconstructive surgery, is the number one center in Atlanta offering endermology. For more information and a complimentary consultation and treatment, call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. Plastikos Endermology Skin Toning and Body Contouring, 770-457-4677. Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education, Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.